We present Sebastian Shaw as Chief Inspector Lynch in Four Ailes, a play for radio by Kenneth Bird.
Evelyn. I tell you something about trees.
What about trees, darling?
They can look sinister in this sort of half-light, writhing about in the wind. Look at them. They remind me of...
Of what?
Not of witch doctors. Some I once saw in Africa. No, no, seriously. Now, those poplars, for instance, over there. They are poplars, aren't they, Tom?
Don't ask me, Chief. I'm a detective, not a naturalist.
Well, anyway, in silhouette, they're like those grotesque, prancing medicine men. I remember they were doing a sort of dervish dance, driving away the spirit of death.
Just a story for a night like this, dear. Comforting.
Okay, kitten. Travelogue ended. Where are we, Tom?
Well, you two have a map in the back seat. I'm just the driver.
Tom, my boy, your liver needs attention.
What?
Sarah's month-old milk. That's been you all day. With the Ringway case nicely buttoned up, I should have expected you to be ripe for merrymaking.
Would you?
Oh, darling, surely you know what's wrong with poor Tom.
No, what?
He's wishing he'd brought his wife along as well.
That's not true. Business and pleasure don't... Well, anyway, it's no concern of mine.
See, darling? Detective Sergeant Mansell is hurt. He knows it's against regulations for me to go with you to investigate a jewel robbery. And bright up-and-coming sergeants have great respect for regulations, haven't they, Tom, dear? They run in their veins instead of blood.
Now, Evelyn.
He hated to think of me waiting like a loving, dutiful wife while you two played Sherlock Holmes at Lord Ringway's home. But you wouldn't have liked him to stay in London, would you, darling?
Well, we shall have to get used to the idea, shan't we? Unless you want me reduced to the ranks.
Well, Tom forgets I had to wait 6 years for you to be free. And we've only been married 8 months.
Yes. Well, where'd you say we were, Tom?
I didn't. But a rough guess, I'd say on the Shropshire head of its border, in the English equivalent of the Burmese jungle. And I'm expecting a tree to blow on us any moment.
Oh, no. Charles, darling, sit up like a guardsman. Relax. Put your arm round me so we can...
What?
What's wrong?
Well, didn't you see that? A figure.
Figure?
Or a shadow, hanged if I know which. It was black, had a sort of hood.
Where'd you see it?
By those bushes, back there on the verge.
Switch the engine off, Tom. We'll have a look. I can't let you spend the rest of your life believing in spooks just because you've seen a chap in a duffel coat.
Now, that's where it was, by those gorse bushes.
Darling, you aren't leaving me alone, are you?
There it is.
Oh!
Is it?
Yes, it's a black figure, all right.
If you go, I'll scream.
Evelyn, don't be ridiculous. Hello there. Anything the matter?
Oh, God be praised. I thought you hadn't seen me.
Well, my wife believed you were a ghost.
Yes, this habit, disconcerting in this light. I'm sorry, but, well, we're having a bit of a nightmare at the Abbey.
Wind been blowing your chimneys down?
No worse than that, much worse. First, Brother Placid. Then the telephone wires down, and now that confounded car.
Had a breakdown?
Yes. I pushed the thing on the grass verge. But look, I've got to get to town at once.
Well, if we can offer you a lift, sir.
Oh, please, but terribly quickly. I don't want to take you out of your way, but I must get to the police station.
Jump in.
Oh, thank you.
What do you want the police station for? Had a robbery?
No, much worse than that. In fact, we none of us can believe it's really happened. It's so utterly senseless.
Yeah?
One of our community, he's been murdered.
Oh, my God.
Murdered? You sure?
Oh, God save us. There's no doubting it, I assure you. A piece of cord, it's knotted round Brother Placid's throat. Look, please don't think me rude, but I must beg you to hurry. As I say, there's no telephone.
May I ask who you are, sir?
Yes, of course. Father Ansell. I'm Bursar of Linfont Abbey.
We're police officers.
Police?
Scotland Yard.
Oh.
I'm Chief Inspector Lynch. My assistant driving, Detective Sergeant Mansell.
And to think of what I said when that car broke down. Well, it's a reminder, isn't it, to be resigned to the will of God.
Where is the Abbey?
Back the way you come, about 2 miles.
Okay, Tom, turn around.
Right, sir.
Forgive the intrusion, darling, but do I take it we're working again?
Evelyn, I'm sorry. Yes, kitten, I'm afraid we are.
I suppose it doesn't matter. We promised to look in at Mike Miller's cocktail party when we got back.
Oh, dear, I'm afraid it doesn't.
Well, can't the county police deal with this thing? After all, it's their murder, not yours.
Oh, they may want to, in which case I'll be finished in a couple of hours. But Evelyn, I can no more ignore a case of murder than, well, than a doctor can turn up his nose at an injured man because he isn't a patient of his.
There's a difference, Charles, between a man needing medical attention and one beyond it.
Not to me, there isn't.
And what are you going to do with me while you're chasing clues at this abbey?
I'm afraid that's quite an important point. Apart from the chapel, the rest of the building is out of bounds to your sex.
Mm, that's matey, isn't it?
There's the village inn at Linfon St. Peter. That's just off the main road on the left. It's isolated, I'm afraid, and rather rough and ready, but...
But it's a roof over my head, I suppose. Yes. And for a woman, anything will do.
Kitten, most likely I'll be back by the time you've downed your first gin.
You'd better be, darling. Otherwise I'll fetch you, even if I have to dress up as a mother superior.
This is the road, sir. This narrow one.
Yes. Yes, turn in here. It's a drive, really, not a road. Mm-hmm. And you'll have to take care because it's a pretty steep drop to down to the abbey.
Right, home.
Gloomy, isn't it?
At night, yes. Inspector, I can't tell you what a shock this has been.
This Brother Placid, the murdered monk, how long had he been with you?
He came the month after the priory was raised to an abbey. That's 14 months ago. By the way, Placid wasn't a monk in the full sense of the word. He was what we call a novice. He hadn't taken his final vow.
In other words, he could have left if he wanted to.
Yes.
Was he a local boy?
He was German.
Ah.
A fine carpenter and woodcarver. Humble and devout, too. That's why we're all sure a maniac must have done this thing.
A maniac? Now, why do you say that? Had the body been mutilated?
I don't think so. I didn't examine it very closely. Too upset. All I saw was... It was the silk cord twisted round his neck.
And who found him?
Brother Paul. He's a novice like Brother Placid. They were both on kitchen duty, preparing meals, washing up, things like that. We all take a turn at it. Placid left chapel immediately after Vespers to start work. Brother Paul followed him he thinks about 10 minutes later. When he went into the kitchen, Brother Placid was lying on the floor.
Any signs of struggle?
None. That's why the abbot thought it must have been done by someone with, well, maniacal strength.
How long was Brother Paul alone in the kitchen before you went in?
Half a minute. But, Inspector, you'll be wrong if you suspect anyone in our community. Apart from Brother Bruno, everybody was in the chapel at the time Brother Placid died.
Where was Brother Bruno?
In bed on the first floor. He's got pleurisy. But no one at Linfont would want to harm Brother Placid.
It's now 7:10. About what time did you find the body?
The trouble is, Inspector, none of us wears a watch.
Uh-huh.
We have a clock in the monastery, but we get out of the habit of looking at it, except on Sundays when we have public services.
Well, approximately.
6:10.
So, if he left chapel 10 minutes earlier than anyone else, he must have died between 6:10.
I think so. Excuse me. Turn right here, Sergeant.
Very well, sir.
Yes, that wouldn't be far out, Inspector. We went into chapel at about 5:30, immediately after evening meal. Look, there's the house, through the trees. See it?
Yeah. What is it? Regency?
Yes, late 18th century. Cold, too. Stone floors, plenty of draughts.
Sounds like that village pub we left my wife at.
Used to be the country house of Lord Willingford. We bought it from his executors, plus 150 acres of land.
150 acres? What do you do with it?
Farm it, of course. We've a herd of Jerseys and... Sergeant, turn sharp left here, will you? Yes. Pull up by the gate opposite the carry-on.
The what?
New word to you, Tom. It means a peal of bells.
Oh.
Follow me. I'll take you to the abbot.
Why? Has he got something to tell me?
Well, no, but he's the head of our community, and naturally he'd like to receive you.
Well, I don't want to be impolite, but frankly, I'd like to see the body first. It hasn't been moved, has it?
Oh, no. We know quite a lot about police procedure, you know. We've got nearly all Agatha Christie's books in our library.
Yes, yes. We used to see just this sort of thing at police college.
What sort of thing?
These bruises, either side of the neck. You see them?
Well, of course I can see them.
On the carotid sinus. Now, whoever did it, well, he knew how to make his victim unconscious.
Up before chapel.
From the look of the plaster, it's been on a long time.
About a fortnight, I should say. Perhaps I should have put an antiseptic on the cut, then it would have healed quicker.
Yes. Is there a key to this door?
Oh, yes, sir. I've got it on this bunch.
Well, lock it, will you? Tom.
Yes, Chief.
Take the car and keep going till you find the first telephone box that's working.
Uh-huh.
Ring county headquarters and get him to send fingerprint men, photographers, the whole circus.
Yes, okay. But look, don't you want me to help you look around? I mean, two pairs of eyes are better.
Tom.
Oh, well.
And when you've done that, ring the GPO and get him to fix this line. Tell him it's police priority.
Okay.
And finally, get through to Scotland Yard and tell Superintendent Veazey what we're doing.
Uh-huh.
And be sure and ask him to get the okay from the local chief constable. I don't want to have to pack in this case once I'm underway, just because some local CID boy thinks he can handle it better.
As you say.
Poor Placid. He's the first monk to die at Linfont without a celebration.
Celebration?
Well, we grieve at being parted from a friend, naturally. But we celebrate the fact that he's gone, we hope, to his eternal reward. Death, you see, even a violent and senseless death like this, is the fulfillment of a monk's life.
Still, if I were a dead monk, I'd hate my chums for whooping it up because I'm a corpse. How many monks are there altogether?
30.
Would you know if any of them were missing from chapel tonight?
One was missing, Brother Bruno, the one who's sick.
Yes, yes, sir. But what I mean is, do you count up or take any kind of roll call?
No, there's nothing military about our discipline.
So if one of your number hadn't gone into chapel, but had stayed in the kitchen waiting for Brother Placid, nobody would have been any the wiser.
No, I suppose not.
But if the murder wasn't done by a monk, it must have been done by someone who got in from outside.
Yes.
Now, the question is, sir, how could he have effected an entry? Now, not through these windows. They're too high up.
No, and they're all like that. But there are three entrances. Through the chapel, that is by way of the public door. But he would have to go across the sanctuary to get into the abbey building itself.
In which case, you'd have seen him, because you were all in church.
Yes. Which leaves the main door, the one you came through, and the side entrance. That's the one at the end of the corridor to the right of the kitchens. But, Inspector, nobody could have used either between 4:30, when we came back from work, and the time I left the abbey to fetch the police.
Why not, sir?
Because they were locked. I saw Brother Paul do it. You see, 2 months ago, we lost a pair of silver candlesticks. The local police advised us to lock the doors after dark while we inquire. So, if a guest comes then, well, he has to come to the chapel.
A guest?
Anyone in need of shelter is a guest. It's part of our rule that we turn no one away.
Have you any guests at the moment?
No, we had one last week. And on Sunday, a businessman and a scientist are coming from London to make a retreat.
What?
To spend a weekend in prayer and meditation. It's a kind of spiritual therapy.
Ah, yeah. And where are the monks now?
In chapel, at some country.
May we look in?
What? Oh, yes, yes, if you wish. Inspector?
Only that you can't tell one monk from another.
Not when they've got their hoods up. But except in choir, hoods are always down. By the way, if you have any preconceived ideas about monks, Father Abbott is likely to shatter them.
Huh?
Dom Gregory didn't become a monk until he retired from the Navy. He was captain of a destroyer.
Is that so?
Yeah, he's been a monk for 15 years. But sometimes when he's in the pulpit, he's inclined to think he's back on the bridge. This is Father Abbott's room.
Ah, there you are, Father.
Inspector Lynch, Father Abbott.
I'm sorry to welcome you in such shocking circumstances, Inspector. Frightful business, isn't it? I mean, here, of all places.
Yes, sir. I'm afraid we're going to upset your routine quite a lot.
Of course, quite understood. What I want to know is, who would want to harm an inoffensive little chap like Brother Placid?
Before he came to you, he mightn't have been so inoffensive. He might have made an enemy.
Might, I suppose. Oh, but Joseph Hanslick was
Hanslick. That's his name, is it?
Yes, he was such a mild, withdrawn little fellow. There was something, well, almost fawn-like about him. You felt that if anyone shouted at him, he'd bolt in sheer terror. And so, isn't it, Father Anselm?
Oh, yes, very nervous.
He worried a lot.
About what?
His worthiness to serve God in the monastic life, his spiritual condition. Apparently, he lost his faith after the war. In fact, well, he didn't find it again until he came here, did he, Father?
No. I was telling the inspector what a fine carpenter he was.
Yes, doing a fine job, wasn't he, on the floor of that barn?
Yes, he was.
Putting in an entire new floor, Inspector, single-handed. And his wood carving. Father, don't forget to show the inspector the statue he was carving.
Oh, yes, I will. It's quite a work of art.
Now, sir, what do you know about his life before he came here?
Oh, not a great deal, I'm afraid. Born, let me see, where was he born at? I've got his papers here in readiness for you. Oh, yes. Berchtesgaden, where that fellow Hitler had his eye. He was 38 years old, youngest of three in family, trained by his father as a carpenter and stonemason. Served in Italy and France during the war, but as he was grade B medically, he was only a clerk in the German equivalent of our Army Pay Corps. After the war, he went to work for a building firm in Munich.
What brought him to England?
He was loaned by his firm to work at the new Anglican Cathedral at Barfield. He and another man were carving a rude screen.
Why did he come to Linfort?
We like to think that God sent him here.
You see, he had been educated by Benedictines in Bavaria, and, well, he suddenly had what seemed to him at the time an inexplicable urge to stay at a Benedictine house.
Well, sir, why didn't he wait till he got back to his own country?
Inspector, I don't think he wanted to go back to his own country.
No?
Look, I've got to be blunt. There are some questions a priest can't answer. Why Josef Hanslick didn't want to return home is one of them.
I don't follow you.
He gave me his reasons in confession. I can't divulge what he said. All I can say is that he personally had nothing to be ashamed of.
But
we confirmed that before admitting him as a postulant, didn't we, Father?
Look, sir, I know your church has rules like any other organization, but surely there are times when rules have to be modified to suit circumstances. A man's been brutally murdered. Now, the law of the land demands that you give every help in bringing his killer to justice.
Inspector, I'm fully aware of what I should render unto Caesar. I also know what I can't render. What I hear in the sacrament of confession is one of them.
I see. And these reasons of his for not going back to Germany, are they relevant to this case? I mean, would it help me to know what they are?
I don't know.
You mean you won't say?
I don't know.
How well did Placid speak English?
Oh, very well, didn't he, Father Anton?
Yeah, very well. Yes, he told me once that he had a gift for learning languages. It was the same with all his family.
Well, now, here's a general question. Had he at any time said or done anything which might help me in my investigations?
Well, I don't know if it's relevant, but there was one breach of discipline, and Father Anselm, you know more about it than I do.
You mean the letter?
Yes.
Well, about a fortnight ago, Brother Placid received a letter.
From?
Well, that's just it. We don't know. Our letters are always left so that anyone in the community can read them. It's part of our rule. But Brother Placid opened this particular letter himself, read it, and destroyed it.
Did he say what was in it?
No. I took him to task about it on the abbot's instructions. But he was, well, evasive.
But it upset him, did it, sir?
Well, one or two of the community, especially Brother Paul and Father Iltit, they noticed a change in him in the past fortnight. They say he became morose. He certainly spoke very little in recreation. It was as if, well, as if he kept away from the others.
Father Iltit, our novice master, actually described him to me as furtive. As if something were preying on his mind.
Perhaps he was frightened, sir.
Perhaps. Father Anselm, 2 days after that letter, Brother Placid was taken ill, wasn't he? I seem to remember something.
Oh, it was nothing serious. He felt faint as we were going to bed and had to be helped into his cell.
His what?
His cell. We call our bedrooms cells.
Oh, God.
To be fair to the poor fellow, he hadn't been up to the mark, had he? That might have made him unsociable. Come in.
Ah, Tom. Father Abbott, this is my assistant, Detective Sergeant Mansell.
Sergeant, huh?
Huh? Did you get through to Gandhi Police?
Yes, and the CID chaps are on their way here with their apparatus. Superintendent Maxwell, he's the chap in charge, he said he was only too delighted to leave the case in what he called your capable hands.
Evelyn isn't going to be very pleased.
Oh, I dropped in and told on my way past
you. You did you? What'd she say?
Well, I'd better tell you that later. I also got onto AC's office at the yard.
Yeah?
Superintendent Hewitt was there, and he was quite happy to let the two of us go on handling it.
Ah, yes. Well, the two of us will do the best we can, won't we?
That's what I told him, sir.
Now, this raises a question, doesn't it, Inspector? Where are you both going to spend the night? Father Anselm will be glad to put two guest rooms at your disposal if you wish.
Of course.
Well, that's very kind of you, and I'm sure Sergeant Mansell will be glad of the offer, but personally, I shall go back to my wife at the inn.
Well, Chief, I hope you're in the mood for a good, long tramp.
What do you mean?
Only that I had to walk the last mile down the drive. The girl's blown a tree across it.
Well, I don't mind walking a mile. Then I can use the car, can't I?
No, there's no room to turn the car around. I'd give a lot to see you reversing back up that drive for a mile and a half in pitch blackness and with a miniature precipice on your right.
Well, damn it, I can't leave Evelyn alone in that pokey little pub.
Inspector, I'm afraid the sergeant is right. It's a long way to Linford St. Peter.
Yes. Yes, I suppose it is. Well, sir, thank you. In that case, we'd both like to stay the night. Tom, something I want you to do.
Yes, sir?
While we're waiting for the CID, go to Brother Placid's cell, search his belongings, and keep an eye open for any letters.
You shouldn't find it a difficult job, Sergeant.
No?
Apart from a toothbrush and razor and a few books, monks have few personal belongings. We renounce those things when we renounce the world.
Don't mind my saying so, but, well, the way you chaps live, you know, sharing everything, not owning anything, isn't it a bit like communism?
To believe that, Sergeant, you have to think that the teachings of Christ and Karl Marx are the same.
Yes, well, I don't know much about either, not really.
Then you see how easy it is to misinterpret what a monk does if you don't know why he does it. Wind has dropped. It seems we shall get a storm.
Right, Brother Paul. Now let me do a brief recap. You went straight to the kitchen after chapel, and you saw the body of Brother Placid.
Yes, that's so.
As you were running out of the kitchen, you collided with Father Anselm coming in.
Yes.
And then you returned to the chapel to tell the abbot what had happened.
That's quite right.
Anything more you can tell me?
Yes. Before I went into chapel, I locked the front door and the side door of this main building. It was a rule of Father Anselm.
Quite so.
Well, about 5 minutes after I'd found Brother Placid, I went to the side door. I thought it was important to see if it was still locked and bolted.
Certainly. And was it?
No. The front door was locked, but the side door was open.
Open?
About 2 inches. It has a noisy catch. You can even hear it on the floor above. So it seems, Inspector, as if whoever went out through that door after Placid's death knew that that door had a noisy catch. Otherwise, he'd have closed it.
Seems to me you've missed your real vocation. You'd have been a detective. You really should. What's the time, Tom? My watch has stopped.
About 1:30.
CID boy's gone?
Yeah, I've just let him out.
You found nothing in Placid's cell, I suppose?
No, not a thing. I even went through his books.
What about the walls?
Look, Chief, I'm not a rookie. I conducted the search exactly as I was taught to do it at college.
Well, that's reassuring. Me for bed.
What time do they get up in this place?
5.
5? Do you mean that in 3.5 hours they'll be coming in with morning tea?
Tea? You'll be lucky. Did you know they kept a visitor's book here?
No.
They do. And there's an interesting entry in it. Very interesting. Apparently... Ah, damn, there's another button off my shirt. Apparently a guest was staying here all last week. Name of Johannes Bonner. A German.
Oh, and
Placid was a German.
Yes. I wonder what brought him here.
This is the shed, Sergeant, where Brother Placid did his carving.
Ah, yes.
He came here regularly until, about a fortnight ago. Then he stopped coming.
Why was that?
I don't know. It was as if he'd suddenly lost interest. If you'll go in.
Well, thank you.
Ah, kept it tidy, didn't he?
I say, is this what he was carving?
Yes. That's his Madonna. He called her Our Lady of Linford.
The face is pretty striking, isn't it?
Yes, it's modeled, so he told me, on the face of his sister. She's a nun in a Franciscan nunnery in Vorarlberg. We're going to put it just as it is on the Lady Chapel altar.
What's that building there on the skyline?
That's the barn Brother Placid was working on right up until yesterday. The old floor had dry rot. He was putting in a new one.
Making good progress?
A fortnight ago, I'd have said he was working remarkably quickly. But lately, well, he seemed to lose interest in that, too.
Had he changed in other ways?
He seemed absorbed. He forgot to do, well, quite ordinary things. Sooner or later, I think the abbot would have had to take him to task. Mm.
Hello? Something going on up there?
Where?
In the drive. Oh, I see what it is. The monks are moving that fallen tree. Now, where on earth did they get the tractor from?
Sergeant, you need a tractor when you're farming 150 acres.
Well, you're completely self-supporting, are you?
Oh, yes. We farm, we keep bees. You can see the hives down there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and that stone building at the back of the abbey, that's our pottery shed. Mm-hmm. Six of the monks worked there under Father Iltyd. He was a pottery designer in Stoke before he came to us.
It's funny. I always imagined you chaps doing nothing but pray from morning to night.
We do that as well, of course.
But Evelyn.
Sounds as if the telephone had been repaired.
But Evelyn, darling.
I'll say.
But Evelyn, the tree was... I couldn't possibly get through. Now, look, Evelyn, the assistant commissioner says I've got to stay on here, so why don't you... Yes, I know you're in a lousy dump. That's why you ought to catch the first train back. What? Well, if you won't, you... Oh, damn, she's rung off.
Having trouble, Chief?
What? Father Anselm, I'm beginning to understand why you chaps become monks.
Oh?
Right now, I feel like joining you. Tom, I want you to do something.
Yeah?
Ring Special Branch, get them to contact Interpol and find out all they can about Josef Hanslick, now known as Brother Placid.
Right.
I want to know everything. His family, what organizations he belonged to, what he did in the war. Tell him that no detail is too insignificant and give it top priority.
Okay. Hello? Oh, hello. I want London, please. Whitehall 1212. Yes, please.
Father Abbott, what can you tell me about the guest you had here last week, Herr Johannes Balmer?
Herr Balmer? Yes, well, he left here... When was it, Father?
3 days ago.
Yes. You've heard of him, Inspector?
Heard of him?
He's a well-known German writer. He wrote The Wilting Flower, a somewhat, well, shall we say in all charity, a somewhat highly coloured novel about Saint-Thérèse de Lisieux, the young French nun who died a saintly death.
Why did he come to Linford?
He was making a lecture tour in England and, well, he suddenly wanted to stay with Benedictines.
Was he alone?
Oh, yes.
Anyone here know him?
Not personally, by repute, of course.
What sort of man was he?
Cultured, charming, spoke English well, and a jolly good pianist, wasn't he, Father?
Frankly, I couldn't believe he wasn't a concert pianist. There was an authority about his playing, a technique. It didn't matter if it was a Viennese popular song or Beethoven.
I agree.
Do you remember that tune he kept playing, Father Abbott? His tune, he called it.
Für Elisa. Yes, I've never heard anyone play a piece with such feeling.
It doesn't sound like one's idea of a popular novelist.
He wasn't. When he first wrote to say he was coming, we were, well, a little apprehensive having read his book. but we were surprised.
What was he like to look at?
Oh, short, close-cut beard, graying slightly like his hair.
Any distinguishing marks, scars, things like that?
No. There were deep lines round his mouth. They made quite an impression on me, those lines.
Oh, why?
Well, they seemed to suggest that that he'd known great suffering.
You mean he was ill? Or had been ill?
No, I don't think so. You realize this is merely speculation.
Oh, of course.
Well, not only the lines, but something about him convinced me that he had undergone some awful experience accompanied by mental suffering.
I see. Yeah. Have you a copy of The Wilting Flower in your library?
Yes, two copies.
May I see them?
Oh, of course. I'll fetch them for you. Excuse me.
Father Abbott, you know that the side door was found unlocked after the murder.
Yes.
Which suggests one of two things. Either that the murderer left the abbey immediately after killing Brother Placid, or that he wanted it to look as if he had.
That seems reasonable.
Right. Well, now we can rule out the second idea, unless, of course, Brother Bruno, the sick monk, did it.
Oh, that's hardly likely.
Yeah, I've talked to him and I agree. Or, unless one of the monks stayed back from chapel unnoticed. Now, Father Abbott, are you aware of any monk having had a disagreement with Brother Placid?
No.
Or a grievance against him?
No, never.
All right. Now, let's look at the other possibility, that someone came in from outside. What time did the monks return from work yesterday evening?
Just about 4:30.
How did they come in ones and twos or in a group?
Last night, they came in a group. I was with them.
What did they do next?
Clean up and then half an hour's recreation before supper. That's at 5:30. Then at 6, we go to chapel for Vespers.
Father Abbott, if I'd wanted to get into this monastery unobserved, could I have done it by, say, putting on the habit of a monk, joining the others as they came in from the fields?
Yeah. You could have done, I suppose, but you'd have run the risk of being recognized as a stranger.
Oh, but it was getting dusk, wasn't it?
Yes, but even
well,
so,
now let's imagine that I keep my head bowed and I'm not noticed.
Yes.
Once I'm in the house, where could I conceal myself?
Well, there are two empty cells on the first floor.
Locked?
No.
Anywhere else?
No. No, nowhere else. Is that what you think happened?
Come in, Sergeant. The inspector's still here.
Tom, just a man. Ring Special Branch again, will you?
Blimey, I've just hung up.
Ask him to ring the home of Herr Johannes Balmer, the novelist, and tell him to get his address from his London agent and ring through direct. What I want to know is where he's been this last week, and especially yesterday.
Okay. What's the theory, Chief?
It isn't a theory. It's one of those hunches you were taught to despise. Uh-huh. Is the box, Father?
He is.
You look puzzled, sir. Anything the matter?
Well, it's rather strange, really. The paper jackets are missing. I know they had their jackets on last week. I remember because I was looking at them.
Tom.
Yes, sir?
Get someone to send down a copy of The Wilting Flower, will you, and say it must have a jacket on it.
But, Chief, why?
Never mind why. Just one of my hunches, Tom.
Inspector Lynch.
Hmm?
May I have a word?
Yes, Brother Paul.
I'm uneasy about something.
Yeah?
I'm probably wasting your time.
You are, sir, if you don't say what's on your mind.
Well, I've been tidying up Brother Placid's body. The coroner's officer said I could.
Yeah?
Well, did you know he cut his chin shaving about a fortnight ago?
I had heard that, yes.
I took the plaster off it because it didn't look very nice and... Well, there's a scar. It looks as if it might be an old one, running from just below the right-hand corner of his lip to the bottom of his chin. The plaster exactly covered it.
What are you getting at, sir?
Well, I knew Brother Placid very well, and I can't remember him having a scar like that.
Brother Bruno, I'm sorry to question you again as you're ill.
Please.
Now listen to me. You were alone in the abbey last night with Brother Placid and the man who killed him.
Yes.
Was your light on?
No, I was trying to sleep.
At the end of this passage are two empty cells, you know that?
Yes.
Think back. Did you hear anything? Anything at all? A door opening, anyone walking about?
I couldn't say. My temperature was too high. I might have had delusions.
Mm-hmm.
And this house, it's old. Floorboards creak. Windows rattle.
But you heard something.
I thought that I could easily have been wrong. There's evil sometimes in the darkness.
Go on, you thought?
I thought I heard footsteps from the empty cells. Yet it couldn't have been. Everyone was at Vespers.
Go on.
I thought I heard the stairs creak, as if someone was going downstairs.
Yeah. How long have you been ill, Brother Brunner?
2 days.
So he wouldn't have known you were here, would he?
Who?
Whoever it was who went downstairs. It's a good thing for you he didn't know. Otherwise, it might have been a double murder.
Designs of Father Iltyd's. Pretty good, eh?
Very. Look, what can you tell me about Brother Placid's family?
Well, there's a sister, a Franciscan nun, and a brother. He was about 2 years older than Placid.
Where is his brother?
I gather he had disappeared after the war.
I can throw a light on this, Father Abbott, with your permission.
Yes, by all means.
I only once heard Brother Placid mention him. He was talking about his school days when he and his brother went to a Benedictine college. He said they were very much alike in appearance.
Did he say anything else?
Well, it wasn't so much what he said that made an impression. It was the bitterness in his voice. As if he didn't like his brother.
What was his Christian name, did he tell you?
No.
Do you know Father Abbott? I get it. Whatever Placid told you in confession concerned his brother, is that it? Well, there's nothing for it. I'm going to back a hunch. Father Abbott, I want a dozen able-bodied monks at once, please.
Father Anselm, perhaps you're the rest.
They're to bring crowbars, hammers, and a length of thick wire or cable with them. I'm afraid we're going to destroy some of Brother Placid's handiwork. And Tom?
Yes, Chief?
I want you to ring county headquarters, the BDI, and give in this message.
No, Inspector Norman. Sergeant Mansell here, Scotland Yard. Chief Inspector Lynch says you're to send a couple of plainclothes men to every barber shop within 10 miles radius of Linford St. Peter. Yeah. Now, look, this is the question they've got to ask. Did they at any time between February the 2nd and 6th give a very close haircut, pretty well a monastic cut, to a man about 5 feet 6 inches tall with a scar extending from his right lip to the corner of his chin and speaking with a pronounced German accent? What? Don't ask me, sir. All I know, he's got half of us scouring the Abbey grounds and the rest pulling up the floor of a barn.
Sad work, Inspector, tearing up his floor. Placid put his heart and soul into making it. See these planks? Every one of them cut and shaped from trees on the estate.
Is that so?
We're looking for him, aren't we?
What makes you think that?
Scar on the chin.
Brother Paul, you've been a big help to me, so I'll tell you something. This morning, the abbot showed me Josef Hanslick's passport. The color of his eyes was given as blue.
That's right. They were.
Were they? Those are the corpse of brown.
Chief!
Here, watch that floor, you go through.
Oh, Lord. Two pieces of news. The monks, the ones searching the coppice, they found these. Look, coat and trousers.
Ah.
Stuffed in a fox's hole, covered with mud and leaves.
Yeah. Pockets empty.
Huh?
Yeah, even the tailor's tag's cut off. Yes, the cut's odd, though, isn't it? Not an English or a continental fashion. What's the other news?
A man answering the description we gave went to a barber shop in Lawnfield on February the 4th. Now, the barber remembers him for his German accent and because he insisted on being cropped almost to his skull.
Tom, my boy, I hate to mention it, but hunches, they work sometimes, don't they?
Inspector, we found a man's body. It's naked. We can't see his face.
Hardly necessary, is it, Brother Paul? It'll be the real Joseph Hanslick. Who? Who? Oh, special branch, yeah. Tom, shut that door, will you?
Yes, of course.
Yeah? Oh, no, I'm not surprised. Right, have you anything more on Hanslick and his brother? I see. So you're following that up, are you? Right. Well, transfer me to Inspector Ryan.
Anything happening?
Just this slow letting in of daylight. Baumer wasn't Baumer.
What do you mean?
Johannes Baumer, the novelist, has spent the last month in Wiesbaden recuperating from a skiing accident. He's never left Germany.
Then the man who came here was an imposter.
Yes, and if I'm not mistaken, he came to find out if Brother Placid was really Brother Placid or the man he wanted to kill. And once he satisfied himself he was trailing the right victim, he found out where he could conceal himself and went away. And when he came back, 3 days later, he was disguised as a monk. Hello, Bill Ryan, Lynch here. Look, put a couple of men onto going round every ecclesiastical tailor in London, will you? Tell them to find out if in the last week a man with a German accent has had himself fitted out with a black Benedictine habit. Oh, you know, serge tunic, what's it, scapular, that sort of thing. Yes, now here's his description. Short, might have a very short beard, hair medium dark and grey. Got it?
Chief.
What?
Might be as well to try theatrical costumiers, too. You know, they hire monks' outfits.
Oh, all right, yes. Bill, try theatrical costumers as well, will you? Right, goodbye.
Present for you.
What is it?
Copy of The Wilting Flower by Johannes Baumer. Ah. Just come from London.
Hmm. Well, it confirms what we already know. See that? Portrait on the back cover.
Hmm. Looks like a Prussian general.
It's the real Johannes Baumer. That's why our imposter took the jackets off both copies. If he hadn't, someone might have spotted the difference.
He took a risk, didn't he? First pretending to be Baumer, then coming back dressed as a monk.
Well, risk or not, it worked both times. What I'd give a lot to know is how in the first place he cottoned on that Meister had murdered Placid and come here in his place.
Meister? Meister? But I thought it was someone named Hanslick, Placid's brother.
According to information just given me by a special branch, corpse number one is likely to be a chap named Meister. Christian name at present unknown.
Chief! Chief! Chief!
Chief! Wakey, wakey!
Huh? Huh? What's that?
I've called you early, Mother dear, because much has happened while you've been in dreamland.
What the hell do you mean?
Bill Ryan came through about 2 a.m. Woke everyone in the Abbey except you. My hunch has worked.
Hunch? I thought you didn't have hunches.
Brainwave, yeah. Then. I was being modest. Remember how I advised you to try theatrical costumiers?
For what?
Oh, blimey, Chief, how long does it take you to wake up? To see if anybody had hired a black Benedictine outfit.
Oh, yes.
Well, I was smack on the bullseye. A chap exactly fitting the description we circulated hired one from a firm called Madge Frost and Simpkins off Water Street. The only difference was he hadn't got a beard like when he stayed here as Baumer.
More daylight, eh?
Yeah, but that isn't all. We've had a stroke of luck.
Why?
The costume was delivered by hand.
Get away.
Yep, to a Mr. Franz Schmidt at the Gainsborough Hall Hotel in East Suffolk Street, SW1. Ryan sent round a couple of men.
You mean Inspector Ryan?
Okay, Inspector Ryan. They told the proprietor, a fellow named Dietz, another dearie, and he said this Schmidt chap, whose description again tallied with Baumer's, this Schmidt showed him his passport in accordance with the regulations, and he gave his address as 82 Albergerstrasse, Innsbruck, Austria.
Tom, why the devil didn't you call me?
Well, it wasn't necessary. I don't think you'd be able to fault what I've done.
You've no right to do anything at all, not when I'm here.
I told Ryan, Inspector Ryan, to get on to Interpol right away and ask him to check that address and hold Franz Schmidt if they found him there. Well, they did as I asked, and Ryan rang back five minutes ago to say that...
But there's no number 82 in the Albergerstrasse.
One mark. If you'd said there wasn't even an Albergerstrasse, I'd have awarded you the jackpot. What's more, there are only two Franz Schmidts in the whole of Innsbruck. One's bedridden, and the other's 3 years old. Elsewhere in Germany and Austria, they're as common as Bill Smith.
So what other action did you take, Chief Commissioner?
Well, rounds onto the Home Office and the Foreign Office and every other office you can think of. And they're getting in touch with their opposite numbers in Germany to find out if the passport's forged or not.
Well, of course it's forged, you chump. If it wasn't, it'd have had his correct address and he'd have found an excuse for not showing it to the hotel proprietor.
At college, we were taught to check even the most obvious facts.
College! Nursery school. What else about Schmidt?
If you're looking for your shoes, they're under the bed.
Ah.
Balmer, alias Schmidt, went on paying for his room at the hotel even while he was away for 6 days, from February the 11th to the 17th.
The dates he was down here as Balmer?
Yeah. I returned on the night of the 17th, and 2 days later, that's the day before yesterday, the day of the murder, he went away early in the morning in a car hired from Eastgate Motors.
With a Benedictine habit in the boot, I'll bet.
Yeah, probably. Well, he got back about 5 hours after the murder, and he checked out for good yesterday morning at 9 a.m. Now Ryan's making inquiries at every airport and seaport in the country, checking passenger lists, the whole works.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, except the Detective Sergeant Fox of Aliens Division will be here any moment. He's motoring down from London.
What for?
With a top-secret letter from Superintendent Veazey.
Top secret?
Containing the life history of a man named Axel Meister, wanted throughout Europe for murder. I can't see.
Now, listen, will you? That tune. Oh, I'm sorry.
Something wrong, Inspector?
Not really. It was that tune, the one Balmer kept playing. Now, what's it called?
For Elisa.
Elisa.
By Beethoven. It was the name of Balmer's wife. I gather she died in the war. I think that's why he played it so often.
Play it again, will you?
Yeah.
Wistful, isn't it?
Yes. The only time I ever saw Herr Balmer show any emotion was when he played this. His face became soft and sad.
Mm. You told me he played popular Viennese numbers as well.
Yes.
Sure they were Viennese?
Quite sure. I studied in Vienna for 2 years before the war.
Huh? Studied what?
Music. German. That's how I knew Balmer himself was Viennese.
Now how could you tell that?
His accent. You can never mistake a Viennese accent.
Someone to see you, Inspector. Detective Sergeant Fox, sir.
Morning, Sergeant. You have a letter for me, I believe.
From Superintendent Veazey, sir. Father Anton, perhaps we should leave the inspector alone.
Of course.
No. No, I should like you to stay. Now, a lot of this won't be news to you, Father Abbott. For instance, that Josef Hanslick's name wasn't Hanslick. He'd changed it in 1947 so as not to be linked with his brother, Axel. Yeah. It says here that Axel Meister was commandant of Bundhausen concentration camp from 1941 to 1944, one of the most brutal Nazi camps in all Austria.
Was he tried as a war criminal?
Yes, he vanished at the liberation, was tried by the Allied courts, found guilty of war crimes, and sentenced to death in his absence. It says here that when Brother Placid, nay Josef Hanslick, nay Josef Meister, applied for British naturalization, he explained that he bore such a close resemblance to his brother that despite his change of name, no fewer than 3 attempts had been made on his life between the end of the war and 1954.
By people who thought he was Axel Meister.
Yes.
Poor Brother Placid. No wonder he signed it bitter when he spoke about his brother.
Latterly, Axel Meister had been in Uruguay. He fled there in 1959 after an attempt by certain persons to apprehend him near the Pyrenees. And a month ago, he was on the run again, finishing up in Montevideo, where he's thought to have boarded a freighter bound for England.
And somehow he found out his brother was at Linford Abbey. I wrote to him here.
Yes. which was a mighty risky thing to do, because Placid might have shown it to somebody.
Yes, pity he didn't. He'd have been alive today if he had.
It's my bet that Axelmeister arrived here on February the 4th, the day he had that monastic crop in Lawnfield, and somehow he knew Brother Placid was working in the barn, so he went straight there.
Poor Placid. All his life he'd been running away from the taint of that man, and then...
Yes, and then he's standing in the doorway.
Yes. Placid must have answered all Meister's questions, what he was doing in the abbey, all that sort of thing, and then... Well, we know only too well what happened. Placid's skull was fractured in three places. His next act was to put on his dead brother's habit and join your community. Now, that first night on his way up to bed, he pretended to feel faint because he didn't know which cell he had to sleep in.
So along came Brother Paul and obligingly helped him into the right one.
Yes, and it also explains, Father Anselm, why he didn't continue carving that Madonna or even speak about it. He didn't know it existed.
Well, anyway, it must have seemed to him as if his disguise was working perfectly. And then Herr Balmer turned up. Now, suddenly, there's a German staying here. For all he knew, one of those who'd been hunting him from country to country.
No wonder he didn't bolt.
Well, perhaps he didn't think anyone would have the audacity to pose as a famous author.
Yes, perhaps. Anyway, he decided to stay. And on the evening of February 20th, Brother Bruno heard someone leave one of the empty cells and tiptoe downstairs. Now, if he'd opened his door, what would he have seen? Just another monk. But in reality, it was this Balmer on his way to the kitchen to strangle Axelmeister.
Yes. Yes, it all fits.
Astonishing.
Right. Now, Sergeant Fox, I want you to drive me to London. Somehow we've got to track down Herr Franz Schmidt, alias Herr Johannes Balmer, alias... Yeah, but that's the point, isn't it? Alias who?
Charles. Charles, are you listening? 3 days in that wretched little pub. 3 days with no hot water, leaking roof, not enough blankets on the bed, abominable food. And what do you care?
Huh?
Do you know the landlord got drunk the night before last and pushed his wife downstairs? Do you? Oh, for God's sake, stop writing things in that notebook and listen to me.
My dear, I've got a lot on my mind.
You've got a lot on your mind. I like that. You should have heard that woman shrieking. And her husband. The language, I've never heard anything like it. I thought I was going to be murdered in my bed. And there were you 5 miles away singing hymns in a monastery.
I did not sing hymns. I was busy.
Well, I tell you this, Charles Lynch. This is the last time I come away with you like this. From now on, I'll be like other wives. Stay at home, watch the telly, and enjoy myself. Did you hear me? Enjoy myself.
Something.
You're the proprietor?
Yes.
Mr. Dietz?
I have said so, haven't I? I am the proprietor.
Chief Inspector Lynch, Scotland Yard.
My God. Have I not seen enough Scotland Yard these 3 days? It is Franz Schmidt again, huh?
Yes?
Have I not told Scotland Yard everything? When he come, when he leave, what he say, what he look like. They search his room, take down the pictures, pull up the carpets. What more have I to do?
Try a cigarette.
Thank you, sir.
What part of Germany do you come from?
Scotland Yard. They have been into that, too. Why I stay in England after I am prisoner of war, who my grandfather is, why I am born in Freiburg.
Freiburg? That's a lovely place to be born in.
You know it?
I've been there on holiday 2 or 3 times and on honeymoon last year.
So... You like the Black Forest, yes? And the cathedral?
Oh, magnificent.
Oh, I tell you this, mein Herr, there is no cathedral like it anywhere in the world. Not nowhere.
Yes. Did you talk much to Franz Schmidt?
Once, 2 times he come into my rooms. We talk about Germany and Austria.
Now, could you tell from his dialect where he come from? What part of Austria?
Oh, yes, I say to him, you come from Vienna, I say. I can tell it from the way you speak.
What did he say?
He say no, he comes from Innsbruck. And I think, it is no business of mine. But most times he plays the piano, Mozart, Beethoven, and tunes I sing as a child.
Did Schmidt receive any letters?
If he does, I do not see them.
Nor make or receive any telephone calls?
Mein Herr, I keep telling you. One instant, if you please.
Ah.
Yes, there is one telephone call. I forget it. It is from that box over there.
What day was this?
Oh, God is willing.
I try to remember.
It is, yes, I remember. It is the night before he goes away, 4 days ago.
Last Monday?
Yes. The dinner, it is finished about 1 hour. He is in the box a long time, perhaps half an hour. In the end, he is shouting as if he is telephoning a very long way. And he is speaking in German.
While you're at the Gainsborough Hotel, sir, the assistant commissioner wanted to see you.
What did he want? Progress report?
Well, as a matter of fact, he did. As we went here, well, I filled in the picture on your behalf.
Kind of you. Care to close the door behind you?
Oh, sorry, sir.
Well, did you get the answer to those two queries I phoned you about?
Naturally. You'll be glad to know they kept a record of that call from, let's see, what was it? Oh, yes, Hinton 8422. It was a call to Vienna.
Ah.
Telephone number... Vienna 542931.
Get it traced right away.
I've already got Sergeant Fox onto it. I told him to make it a top priority.
Tom,
When
you were at school, were you always top of the class? The smartest, slickest, quickest boy in the form?
I was a good scholar, why?
Well, Nelly. And the frightening thing is that one day you're almost bound to be my boss. Now, what about the other query?
Franz Schmidt flew to Paris the day after the murder on the 10 o'clock plane from London Airport.
Paris?
Yes, Paris. But being the smartest, because the quickest boy in the form, I pushed the inquiry a bit further and discovered that he boarded a German passenger plane on to Vienna.
Vienna? Huh. Well, that about clinches it, doesn't it? And yet, you know, I'm a wee bit worried.
Well, I don't see why.
Well, that telephone call, practically throwing the game away. And that pretty obvious route back to Vienna, well, our Herr Schmidt or... whoever he is, doesn't seem at much pains to cover his tracks, does he?
Well, perhaps like a lot of killers, he's not very bright.
Perhaps.
Or maybe he didn't expect us to trace him to the Gainsborough Hall Hotel. He might have thought we hadn't a gun to check on theatrical costumiers.
Tom, my boy, there's something about you that... Oh, well, never mind.
Anyway, it's a clear case for Interpol, isn't it, sir?
Not if I can persuade the AC to let me go to Vienna myself.
I say, that's a good idea. You'll need me, I suppose.
No, nope, thank you.
Oh, why not, sir? Taking your bite.
Hello. Yes, Lynch here. Oh, the telephone number. Tom, take this down as I call it out.
Right, have you?
The what, restaurant? The Yabuka. Spell it. J-A-B-U-K-A. Near the Opera, Vienna. Thank you. Now, what made our Herr Schmidt ring up a Viennese restaurant, I wonder? And only a few hours before he strangled Axel Meister.
Would you like a drink, gentlemen?
Yes, please. Small whiskey and soda.
And for you, sir?
A large pink gin.
Thank you.
Inspector, perhaps you'll allow me the pleasure of paying for your drink.
That's very kind of you. How did you know I was an inspector?
Well, couldn't have been a wild guess now, could it? Chief Inspector Charles Lynch, isn't it? Scotland Yard.
I'm used to riddles, Mr...
Geary. Major Geary, retired.
So I'll try, Major, to solve your particular conundrum. Either we've met before, or you're a mind reader.
No.
The passenger list.
Inspector, this isn't a guessing game. It's more serious than that.
What is this serious matter, Major Geary?
Bluntly, I wanted to save you a journey to Vienna. Unfortunately, my cab was delayed en route to the airport, so... well, as you can't stop an aircraft like you can a locomotive, I guess we'll have to go to Vienna and like it. But I can still save you trouble... and stop you making a fool of yourself.
Major, are you trying to tell me you know why I'm going to Vienna?
Sure. Else I wouldn't be here now, would I? Look, there's no secret about what you've been doing, is there? I mean, it's been in the papers. You've been assembling the fragments of a problem. And now you think you're nearly home, don't you?
Do I?
Well, if you didn't, you wouldn't be on this plane.
Oh, that's logical. So what you want me to do?
Stay the night in Vienna and fly back tomorrow.
Why?
Because there's some muddy water that's best left undisturbed.
Your drink, sir.
Oh, thank you, honey. Take the both out of that, will you? Keep the change.
Thank you.
I suspect your friend's mixed up in this.
Inspector, I guess I'm like a politician or a Supreme Court judge. I know the problem, but not the individuals concerned.
Major, perhaps you've forgotten something.
Huh?
I'm looking for a murderer.
Chief Inspector Lynch?
Huh? Yes, Lynch. Oh, you're...
Polizeikommissar Grimmel of the Vienna Police.
Sir Grimmel, just a minute. Look, see that fellow over there at the customs, the American? Ever seen him before?
There. Oh, yeah, yeah. That is Alexander Geary. He's the correspondent in Vienna of a daily newspaper in New York. A man of much power in Austrian affairs, if you understand me. Very powerful indeed. Have you cleared customs, Sir Inspector?
I have.
Then let us go. There you are, Herr Inspector. Perhaps your journey's in, the Opera Platz. And beyond, nightclubs and cafes, music, wine and women.
All very expensive.
Expensive, yes, yes. If you don't want to spend a lot of money, you do not amuse yourself here. Here you have a cabaret as well as food.
Well, the Yabuka has a cabaret, has it?
Not exactly cabaret. Not what the Americans call a floor show. But there is music, simple if you understand, and the songs. It is what you call a bohemian. Poets and painters, they go there to talk about what they do.
Who's the proprietor?
Ah, Fräulein Anna Maria Waldbrunner. A creature divine. Her omelets with prawns and mushrooms. They are the food of angels.
Don't talk to me about food, Herr Grimmel. The last few days I've been living on sausages and fish.
Is this at the monastery where the two men are murdered?
Yeah.
And this man you look for, he killed them both?
No, he only killed one of them. But he's going to stand trial just the same.
But correct me if I am wrong. You must first make out a prima facie case, must you not? And if you do not, then, my government, they will not agree to an order of extradition.
Well, we'll come to that obstacle in time. First, I've got to find him. And all I've got to go on is his description and the fact that he knows someone at the Yabuka restaurant.
Has it come to your thoughts that this man would not have telephoned the Yabuka if, well, if it had been the place where he lived? It would be too dangerous.
Yes. But I believe Herr Schmidt rang the Yabuka because he wanted to speak to someone there so badly that he was prepared to risk everything.
So, you mean a woman?
Yes, a woman. Why are you stopping?
Because across this courtyard is the Yabuka. See, there is the sign.
The Yabuka.
In summer, the people, they sit here under these balconies and drink beer and sing. And the creepers, they are hung with pink and gold lanterns. We go in?
Mein Herr.
You are the head waiter?
Jawohl.
We wish to speak with Fräulein Waldbrunner.
Fräulein Waldbrunner is unwell, mein Herr. She is not to be disturbed.
Her room, it is up those stairs, is it not?
Einen Augenblick. I will see if she is able to see you. You are on business, mein Herr?
We are on business.
This place ever been in trouble with the police?
Oh, no. It is respectable. I know of it myself only because I am devoted to Fräulein Waldbrunner's omelettes. The man you look for, you do not see him?
No.
You have a saying, have you not? It is like looking for the needle in the load of hay.
Meine Herren.
Ah, Fräulein Waldbrunner. May I present myself? Polizeikommissar Grimmel, Eduard Grimmel. And my friend, Chief Inspector Lynch of the English Police.
Fräulein.
Willkommen in der Yabuka.
If I may take the freedom, Fräulein, you look in that gown as ravishing as the omelets which I have many times...
Gentlemen, my English is not good, and I have a headache. Perhaps you will not waste words.
Herr Inspector.
Fräulein, last Monday evening at about 8:30, you received a telephone call from England.
I?
The call was made to this restaurant.
Many telephone calls come here, Herr Inspector. Was it a call to some particular person? Or from someone, perhaps, who wished to reserve a table?
Now, do people usually ring up from England, Fräulein, to reserve a table?
Perhaps not. Monday, you say. I was not here. But perhaps...
Perhaps?
It was a customer taking, a business call. Over there's a telephone. It is for them to use.
Fräulein Waldbrunner, you don't usually ring someone you want urgently to speak to at a public restaurant.
You know it was urgent.
There were at least two reasons why it was unwise of the caller to telephone this number.
Really?
First, the call could be traced, as you see from the fact that I'm here. Two, he was on the eve of committing a murder.
Ah, but this is your Unsinn. I do not understand this English.
I think you understand me. He rang this restaurant because he knew positively that the person he wanted to speak to would be here.
So? Then I will ask my manager, Friedrich Oberländler. He was at the desk on Monday. Bitte mich zu entschuldigen.
Ja, gnädiges Fräulein.
Very nice. As respectable as the cafe, I suppose.
Who?
A Fräulein.
Well, not quite.
Huh?
She is not a Fräulein. There is a husband. 3-4 years ago, he went away.
Went away?
Left her. There was the other woman, you understand? It was mad, do you not think, to have left one so beautiful? If for nothing else, my friend, I would have stayed for those omelettes.
Does she live alone?
There are, two minds on the matter.
What does your mind say? As if I didn't know.
That she has been in love many years, and that when her husband went away, this lover, came here to live.
Who is he?
It is he whom you will... Fräulein.
I have spoken with Mr. Oberländer.
Yeah?
It is true what you say. On Monday night, there was a telephone call from London. It was for a man who dined here. He was by the desk, waiting.
Was he known to Herr Oberländer?
Friedrich has never seen him before.
So you wouldn't know his name?
I will ask Friedrich if you wish.
Herr Inspector, there is something strange here.
Strange?
I do not understand. These people, they have been coming in this few minutes.
Well?
But they are not artists.
Well, there's no law against it, is there?
No. But they are people you would not expect to find in such a place as this. Distinguished people.
Ah.
Look. There is Herr Oskar Frick, a judge. A very important man in Vienna. And there is Kurt Sunderlich, professor of economics at the university. And with him is Frau Ackermann, a great archaeologist. Ah, Fräulein.
Friedrich is not sure of this customer's name. It was something simple like Schmidt.
Fräulein. At that table over there. Is it not Wilhelm Schön, the conductor?
Oh, yes. It is a long time since he was here.
Forgive me, Fräulein, but I would not have expected such an illustrious man
to dine here. But they are friends, mein Herr. Dear friends of Karl and me. It comforts us to see them.
Fräulein, written down here is a description of the man we're looking for. Will you read it, please?
Of course. Short, dark hair... Beard graying slightly. He sounds attractive, Herr Inspector. Should I know him?
Yes. I think you do, Fräulein. Perhaps I can refresh your memory. His wife, she died during the war. Her name was Elise. The name of the tune your pianist is playing. The pianist with the graying hair.
Where are you going?
To listen more closely.
Everyone is watching, my hair. Can you not see? It is as if they are waiting. I do not understand.
Good evening, Herr Baumer. Or is it Herr Franz Schmidt? I hope you weren't fatigued by your lecture tour in England.
You are no music lover, Chief Inspector Lynch. Or you would not speak while I'm playing Beethoven.
You were expecting me?
Of course. And I'm displeased that you ate at a restaurant near the police headquarters instead of here.
You seem well informed.
I am.
And perhaps you'll start putting me on equal terms, beginning with your name.
Schech. Karl Schech. Pianist of the Yabuka.
We have a lot to talk about, Herr Schech.
Have we?
Axel Meister, for instance.
Axel Meister?
The man with me is Herr Grimmel of the Central Police. I expect you knew that.
Yes, I knew it.
Well, perhaps the three of us can talk in the Fräulein's room.
Not the three of us, Herr Inspector. That would be foolish. You and me. Yes, we can talk.
Very well.
Karl, we have many distinguished people here tonight, and they are waiting for you to play.
In a few minutes, meine Liebe. First, there are matters to talk over with this gentleman from England. If you will follow me. Glass of wine, Herr Inspector.
Well, thank you.
You will forgive me if I help myself. I take it that you are suspecting me of some crime.
Well, as you seem to know everything, I expect you're aware that I'm waiting to charge you with murder.
Murder? And may the suspected assassin ask whom he is supposed to have murdered?
Axel Meister, former commandant of Bundhausen concentration camp. At the time you killed him, he was masquerading as his brother, Josef Hanslick, otherwise known as Brother Placid, at Linfont Abbey in England.
You have proof of my guilt?
At least a dozen monks will be able to identify you as Herr Balmer. A theatrical costumier and the proprietor of the Gainsborough Hall Hotel can identify you as Franz Schmidt.
Is that so? And tell me, Herr Inspector, what do you propose to do with me?
Simple, Herr Schick. Once you've been identified, an application will be made to your government, with whom we have an extradition agreement, for you to be sent to England to stand trial.
As you say, simple. Is it not? As long, of course, as my government agrees that an extradition order is, as you say, justified?
Naturally.
Inspector, at this moment we are alone, so I can talk freely.
As long as you realize that anything you say may be taken down and
of
you...
Of course, all that I know. Inspector, you are right. I did kill Axel Meister. No, notebooks.
But you...
They will come later if they are necessary. You wish me to go on?
Well?
I went to Linfont Abbey to satisfy myself that the man we are watching is really Axel Meister, and not his brother, Josef. And then, I choked him. I expect you know how I did this thing. Dressed as a monk, I joined the brothers coming in from the fields. I hid upstairs until after chapel. And, well, the rest is, as you would say, simple.
Why did you use a length of cord?
It was a silk cord, a part of his ceremonial uniform at Bundhausen. Like Hermann Göring and other twisted minds, he was fond of dressing up. But surely, Herr Inspector, what puzzles you is not how I did it, but why. Is that not so?
Well, I have an idea, but...
Then I will set your mind at rest. Inspector, my wife, Elise, believed in the liberty of the individual, and she made the fatal mistake of saying so where she could be heard. We have been married 3 years. When we are both arrested, she for political affiliations, I for being her husband. For 2 years, we do not see each other. When we meet again, it is in Bundhausen prison camp in the hard winter of 1942. Our commandant, Herr Inspector, is the late Axel Meister. Are you sure you will not have wine?
No, thank you.
3 months later, on the orders of Adolf Hitler, Meister puts to death by gas every woman in the camp. One of them is Elise. My wife. As I say, Meister is only doing what he is told, but he sees fit to add certain refinements of his own. First, he makes us, the husbands, pump gas into the sealed room in which they are herded like cattle in a slaughterhouse. And when they are dead, he tells us to take our wives from the gas chamber and throw their bodies into the sewer which served the camp. Herr Inspector, I do not ask for your sympathy, but as I threw my Elise's body into that slime, I saw the grinning face of Axel Meister and hate
of a kind I wouldn't have believed possible. Entered my heart and stayed there. Please, I beg you to join me in a little wine.
A small glass, then.
After the war, a few of us who had survived Bandhausen formed what you call a group, the old comrades of Bandhausen. From time to time we met, we sang songs, and together we tried to find something we had lost. Faith in mankind. It is a slow journey, Inspector, and some wounds never heal.
Axel Meister being one of them.
Yes. His name was never mentioned by any of us until we heard that he and his two lieutenants had escaped from Germany and could not be executed for crimes of which they had been found guilty. So we took upon ourselves the task of seeing that the sentence of the court was carried out. The lieutenants, in a year, they were dealt with. But Axel Meister, he was as cunning and ruthless as he had been brutal. But we had friends all over the world. Are men and women who believe that humanity should be cleansed of those who kill and maim for pleasures. We hear from them that Meister is in Sweden, then France, then South America. But like a snake, he slips through the meshes of our net and goes to England.
Did you know he had a brother at Linfont Abbey?
Inspector, we have always been, shall I say, interested in Joseph. He had the misfortune to look like his brother. And it was in our thoughts that one day Axel Meister might see the opportunities in that resemblance. And when we hear that he has been seen in the town of Ludlow, not many kilometers from Linfont, I was chosen.
You were chosen to assume the identity of Balmer and investigate.
That is so. The very first time I talked with him, I knew it was Axel and not Joseph Meister. There was no forgetting his look.
Wasn't he suspicious?
At first, yes. But I was friendly. I told him I had been in America all through the war. In the end, he believed I was Johannes Baumer.
In the kitchen. Did he recognize you then?
I do not know. Because I did not look to see. I did this thing without feelings. Like an executioner who afterwards will collect his fee.
Well, Sheik, I'm sure an English jury will take all this into account. You know what sort of a chap Meister was and your motives for killing him, but, well, I've two bodies to account for, and it has to be geared up legally. So, well, if you're willing to repeat your confession in front of Herr Grimmel, we'll put it down on paper, shall we, and get it over with. What's so funny?
This confession that you speak of, what confession?
Huh? Well, what you've just been saying.
Herr Inspector, what a pity it is that you're only a policeman, a robot, an instrument of the law, unthinking and unfeeling.
I don't get you.
Those without imagination cannot be allowed delusions, my friend, which is sad for both of us. Anna Maria, meine Liebe.
Come in, Karl. You are all right?
Of course I'm all right. It is the English inspector who is unwell. It comes of eating at Frau Kalten's cafe instead of here. Herr Grimme, come if you please. Anna Maria, bring in Herr Frick and Herr Sunderli.
Of course. Only those.
Only those.
I don't know what you're up to, Herr Sheik, but you aren't fooling me.
Fooling? But, Herr Inspector, I only want to show you that a man cannot be in two places at the same time.
Something is wrong, Herr Lynch.
Yes, Herr Grimmel, and I wish I knew what the hell it was.
Come in, my friend.
Well, of course, my dear sir. What is it?
Now, Inspector, last Friday I'm supposed to be where?
At the Gainsborough Hall Hotel in London.
So, allow me to present Herr Oscar Frick, a judge of what you in England would call the Court of Appeal. Herr Frick, be so good as to tell the inspector where I was last Friday.
Last Friday? At my house. We dined. It was a most pleasing evening.
You are sure it was me?
Sure? But of course I am sure. Dr. Felbermayr was there also. Well, he brought you home, did he not?
Of course. And he too would say that I was not in England.
But naturally.
Thank you. And this is Herr Kurt Sunderlich, professor of economics at the university. Herr Sunderlich, was I not with you on Sunday of this week?
Of course. You dined with me in my rooms. After dinner, we played the violin sonata of Mozart in... what was the key?
In A.
Yeah, in A. Beautiful, beautiful.
And on Monday, when the inspector says I was murdering someone in England... Tell him, Anna Maria, where was I then?
With me, at the concert von den alten Kameraden von Bandhausen.
At the concert of the old comrades of Bandhausen, where I played the Schubert sonata, watched by how many people, Anna?
50, 60...
All of whom will swear that I was on the platform and not in England. Oh, nicht wahr, meine Herren? And it is the same for each day, Inspector. There will always be some person or persons of distinction to say that I was here. If you do not believe me, there are, by coincidence, 12 people dining at the Yabuka at this moment who will, what is the word, testify.
Yes, I'm sure there are.
Anna, bring in Dr. Felbermayr and Herr Schön and Frau Ackermann.
Don't bother.
What? You do not want them to testify?
No.
Very wise, Herr Inspector. Very wise. The evidence. There is too much for an exposition to be granted, it would seem.
Your hat, Inspector.
Thank you.
Inspector Lynch.
Well?
Please, you must try to understand.
Hello there. Cigarette?
No, thanks.
Your mission, I take it, was a failure. Oh, well, I tried to save your disappointment, didn't I? Still, it could be for the best. Thought of that?
Yes, Major, I've thought of it. Were you at Bandhausen?
No. But my first wife, she was Austrian. She died there.
With the others?
Yeah.
So I suppose you were in on this execution.
No, but I know something about it.
Yes.
I also know this, Inspector, that there are some affronts to human dignity so outrageous that nothing, not even time, can heal them up. What Axel Meister did at that camp was one of them.
And you think it warrants a man taking the law into his own hands?
You forget, our friend merely carried out the law's demands, the law being unable to exact its own penalty.
That's false reasoning, and you know it. All you and Herr Scheck and all the others did was keep a vendetta. You got your own back. You settled an old score, and it doesn't matter how much you moralize, that's what it amounts to. And you don't rediscover your faith in human nature or reconstruct civilization by taking an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
We could argue all night, but ethics isn't my strong subject.
I can believe that, Major Gary.
What I wanted to give you was a piece of information.
Hmm? What now?
When you left Linfon Abbey, the bodies of Joseph Meister and his murderer were in the chapel, weren't they?
Yes.
Well, maybe 2 hours after you'd gone, a couple of undertakers showed up. At least ways they looked like undertakers. While the monks were out, they went into the chapel with a coffin filled with lead wrapped in sacking. And they substituted it for the one with Axel Meister's body in it.
Why?
There was a school of thought, Inspector, that felt that he shouldn't have the dignity of a Christian burial.
Why are you telling me this?
Oh, 2 reasons, I guess. So you can tell the good abbot of Linfont that he's wasting a plot of holy ground. And,
If somebody finds a body gumming up the local sanitation, you can tell them whose it was.
In Four Ladies by Kenneth Bird, the cast was as follows. Chief Inspector Lynch, Sebastian Shaw, Herr Schech, Ernst Ullmann, Father Anselm, John Wise, the Abbot, Felix Felton, Detective Sergeant Mansell, Peter Wilde, Frau Waldbrunner, Irene Plador, Evelyn Lynch, Nancy Jackson. Others taking part were Brian Kellett, Kenneth Dight, Janet Hewlett, Ralph Lawton, Philip Morant, Julian Summers, Tony Steedman, and Arthur R. Webb. The recorded production was by Hugh Stewart in the BBC's Midland Studios.